The views and opinions of shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
Good morning.
It's afternoon.
Oh, you suckered me right in on that one.
I lured Bill in.
Good afternoon.
Hey, you know what? If we change the show again, we could be good evening.
Good evening.
I would like that. That would be fun. Afternoon, like, loses a little bit of its punch.
I think you'd keep people awake at night.
So, you have tuned in to We the People Radio. And despite our chaotic beginning, you should stick around. It'll be fun. Bob, how's it been this morning?
Oh, it has been a busy morning. Everybody's been live, which is very good for the post-Christmas weekend.
Yeah. Oh, really? Does everybody go for the can show?
Well, we had several replays yesterday, which it's up to the individual host, but they they often like to take time off at the end of the year.
Boring
but,
for
yeah,
you,
everybody's
though.
Everybody's gone.
Everybody's been present and accounted for today.
Nice. Well, we air now all the time, Sundays from noon to 2, which is technically afternoon, but I guess I'm just going to continue to think it's morning. And Bill will continue to think, I guess, whatever I tell him it is.
No.
That's not good.
That's not good.
But
no,
you know what?
I won't say good morning ever again.
Today is the day we could potentially fix this. Oh, and by the way, join us online, wethepeopleradio.us.
Where it's morning somewhere.
Where it's more absolutely morning somewhere. And actually, there's a handy-dandy link on there where you can join the chat. We'll see if we can get some folks in the chat today. We had a little issue with that last week, but I think we're cured now. And whatever we're not cured of, we will be cured of by the end of the show, because we have Dr. Tom Andrews with us this morning, who is a psychiatrist.
Yeah, I'm not going to let him look me in the eye. I'm going to constantly look away.
Different from psychologist, because you're an MD.
That's correct.
I don't really know the difference between the two, and as I was telling you before the show, I read the list of all the things that he fixes, and it was really long. And a lot of them I didn't know what they were, which is probably good. Either that or those are the ones I have.
Well, and I hope with today's topic we can help people fix some of the problems they're having.
Exactly. Because most of the time, well, people make them. Okay, who makes them? The people themselves, or are they built in?
Oh, there's
I know
so
that's
many
like
factors.
the age old question, huh? What came first?
Yeah, that's right.
The mental illness or their family?
The chicken or the egg?
So Christmas is stressful for people.
Oh, you bet it is.
Yeah, and some people either really super love it or it's meltdown city.
Exactly, and we get those kind of cases in the ER usually around this time, and so we try and help. But now that Christmas has passed, we have to deal with New Year's.
That's probably even bigger, huh?
It really is, because people really look at their life and say, what have I accomplished for the year, or what problems are still with me for the year, and how can I change this? So it's a lot of angst sometimes.
Uh-huh. So what, I mean, if you had to, you know, obviously you don't treat the whole world, right? So we're guessing here on some of this.
Right.
But just in round numbers, you've been doing this for a long time. How many years?
30.
Yeah, okay. So you're qualified to shoot some guesswork here.
Yes.
So how many people do New Year's resolutions, do you think? Like, what percentage of the population is really kind of, you know?
You know, that's a good question. I mean, some studies say that maybe as much as 50% do.
Sure.
But how many times have you, you know, tried to, let's say, break a habit that you're trying to break?
Yeah.
So, you know, like Mark Twain said with smoking, it's easy to do. He says, I've done it thousands of times. So, you know, I mean, that kind of thing. So what we try and do is not necessarily do the resolutions, but look at the patients that we get in our office. But I think for the general population, general public, it's an opportunity here to see what kind of resolutions you do, what is popular to do, and how to succeed at it, and what ways to avoid the pitfalls in your resolution. So
that's a biggie.
Yeah.
Because, you know, absolutely, if you literally set yourself up to fail.
Right.
I would imagine people do that on a pretty regular basis.
Exactly.
The goal's just a little too high, or it's kind of unreachable, or it's really one they don't care about.
That's right. And, you know, like some of the studies, the 10 most popular things that people try and change are like spending more time with their family, fitness.
I bet that's big.
Weight control.
Yeah, I'm sure weight loss is right up
fighting the bulge, you know.
Yeah.
And quit smoking. Enjoying life more. Quit drinking or drinking too much. And then getting out of debt. That's becoming a big item for people. Yeah, it's a big one. And then learning something new. Helping others, and then finally getting your life organized.
Oh, wow. Yeah, those
are 10.
Getting your life organized, it's kind of a tall order.
But 50% of people that put the top of the list, if you're going to do Family Feud, you know, make reference to it, number one was spending more time with their family.
Really?
It just shows you the pace of what we're moving at in our society and the pressures.
And so they feel like they have to have a New Year's resolution to spend more time with their family?
Exactly.
And then how many people that make these resolutions succeed?
Again, we're totally guessing, but, you know.
Well, it's very difficult, and we'll, I think, a little later touch base on something like that. But, you know, for instance, in one study, they asked how many people, you know, tried to lose weight. 85% said they did. How many gained the weight back? 85% said they did. So,
95.
Well, and the thing is, they gained their weight back at 107%.
Right.
So they actually went past where they were dieting from.
So it's not really a boomerang. It's actually,
comes back. So those are some things that maybe we can look at how they're doing that as we talk to approach that.
All right. So where do you want to start? We've got what?
Well,
Bob's still choosing music, so we can keep talking.
Well, we're all good. Well, I think the first thing you do is not to look at the statistics, what everyone's trying to change in their lives, but what are your personal goals, number one? So,
sure.
So kind of brainstorm. What do you want to do to change a goal in your life? Is it stop smoking? Is it trying to spend more time with your family? Is it trying to get out of debt? Is it trying to self-improvement? Are you going to learn a new language this year? Are you going to, you know, go to school and advance yourself? Do you have these kind of goals for yourself? So that's very important. And then you have to break it down into smaller steps. How am I going to succeed at that? So that's another thing. And we call them SMART goals, but you want to be specific, you know, and then you want to be measurable. Can you measure it, or is it meaningful to you? You know,
will you know when you get there?
Sort of, and it's kind of a goal. Is it, how am I going to measure this? Okay, weight loss is easy because you can see the scale go down, or exercise. Maybe I can spend more minutes on the treadmill, or I can spend more minutes exercising. Those are easier ones to attain. And then is it an attainable goal? Finally.
Right. And do people, when it comes to a resolution, do people wait until, like, you know, 11:59 and then say, this is my New Year's resolution, or do they actually give it some thought?
Well, the ones that are more successful give it thought.
Yeah, before.
Yeah, like I said, you be specific, measurable, attainable, and you get a reward out of it. You make it relevant to you. And then finally, the T for it is it's time-oriented. So you're not saying it's never land. You set a goal.
You set a goal.
So that's the SMART acronym for those goals. So that is a start to setting the goals. But there was a study done by Shafir and Melanthan from Harvard, and they say that we get into vicious cycles of these goals, and that we tend to back ourselves into a corner with them, and we develop a maladaptive thing. Now, what they did is, I told you we get in that Family Feud situation. But in Family Feud, you know how you have to guess the numbers, and each team has so much time to do it. And they took a second away from a team for the time to do it. And so they actually had more clues, more effort, and more time in that speed. But then when they got to a bargaining situation where they said, well, look, we'll give you an extra second, 2 seconds, but we get back a second later on. The teams that did that did worse.
Oh.
Because you think, oh, the pressure would be less. No, the pressure got more as it went further.
Because they
on.
Knew they might be wasting it now, and it would be taken away later.
Exactly. Mm. And so they connected that with some of the pressures we are in society when we borrow and do things under pressure. And that's what they were saying, that sometimes it's not the fact that you're having economic stress or you're in a situation where you'd be in a financial bind, but that you, under that stress and pressure, you make poor decisions because you feel pressured to make the decision in a more restricted way, time or funds. And that actually contributes more to the stress and the poor decision-making.
So these would be the people, like, for instance, who want to lose weight this year, but it has to be done by May because there's a wedding.
Right. That would be one way of putting that pressure on, that time pressure.
So you have a New Year's resolution, but it has sort of a drop-dead date, and it's a little bit out of reach.
That's right. You have to have some sort of plan in the process that measures the goal, let's say week one, week two. And we'll get into some of those reasons, how that can be beneficial to you if you do the right steps for that.
What about peer pressure? I mean, I know a lot of people come up with these resolutions as a group, you know, and that doesn't really seem like a good way to do it, because now it's not really your resolution at that point.
It depends how it's done. For instance, there was a study done out of, I believe Dr. Matthews did it out of Dominican University, that's right. And she said that if you can make a commitment, and then if you have someone you're accountable to.
Okay.
You know, in fact, some of the best stop smoking programs are the ones in which people go together, and then they have a partner. And when they feel like smoking, they call, and then partner calls
them. It's like AA for smoking.
Yeah, I guess it's a puff out. but they do what they have to do. But that's a very beneficial thing for them. Mm. And the idea of, and then they rank them. What's better, to do this, this, or this? Well, the number one thing is if you do all three, and especially if you add the accountability.
Right.
Being accountable is important. I mean, you just like you come to this program here, you got to be here on time. If you weren't accountable, you'd be late and
people,
you'd be pressured.
Go ahead and laugh out there. Go ahead, get it out of your system.
If you've got somebody like on your team to kind of support you.
Exactly.
Sometimes that's
right.
Is a good thing.
That's right. Even if he thinks it's the morning, right?
See, Bob's a total enabler because he just plays another commercial. We know we're saved.
Use it, Bob. Use it. I'm hitting a nerve.
Well, okay. All right. Well, he said we have to take a break. I have all these questions. Okay, I have a million questions brewing. And by the way, if people have questions out there or comments, you can put them through the chat, or you can call us if you'd like. Phone number is 530-605-4567, and join us online at wethepeopleradio.us. We'll be right back with Dr. Tom Andrews. We'll figure out how to win at New Year's resolutions.
Make it stop.
All right, let's get back to the Peter Pan advice.
And the scars in the face, though. I like that. That's my favorite.
You're joining We the People Radio. We're here with Dr. Tom Andrews. We're talking about New Year's resolutions and pressure. And we're giving Bob the amazing opportunity to find all the crazy songs. You know, we don't have a lot of psychiatrists on. People are, of course, thinking we should do that more often. But I was thinking about it on my way here. I thought, man, that is a treasure trove of music going on there.
I know. You didn't bring out Talking Heads. Thank you.
We have time. We have time.
Oh, we have lots of time.
Oh, my gosh. Well, we were chatting in the break. The New Year thing goes, what, one of two ways, really?
Yes.
You got the folks that are headed toward the end of the new year going, wow, this was great, you know, another year, woohoo. And you got the other people that are going, I didn't do this and I didn't do that and I suck and ew.
Yeah. I wonder how many people actually.
I bet they're super fun at the Christmas party.
Yeah, but they see this new year coming up. They see that, you know, January 1st is here and start sweating it way before it gets here. It's like, oh.
Yeah.
Here we are again.
It's not just on the business taxes either.
So
the folks that see the year always as kind of half empty and usually, I mean, it's just my guess, but my guess is the goals were too big. And really weren't things you could attain anyway, necessarily. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. When people start talking about happiness, I mean, really?
It's a big word.
Yeah.
It's loaded, isn't
where do you, it? Where do you park that?
Yeah.
Do you have a lot of that? You see a lot of that?
We do see some people who are unwilling to look at maybe smaller goals because they want the whole thing fixed immediately. And so if it's not fixed immediately or fixed even by the year's end, then they think that, well, I'm still stuck in this place. And it feels like we talked about it, when you're in a race, you feel like life's sort of a race. You go around and you're progressing in it. It's a marathon, obviously.
Yeah.
But it's, you do a lap and you think, oh, that's a quarter mile. I've accomplished this. I've accomplished a half mile, a mile. I've done that. But these people, many times, and it could be all of us, not just these people, us.
Sure.
We think we're going backwards or haven't. We're actually retracing old patterns and, you mm-hmm. know, especially trying to break old habits. And you feel like I'm going backwards, not forwards. I'm struggling. And, when you hear all the nice, quaint ideas such as, well, it's just the experience that you should have, but and that it's the sense of you are developing scars and mileage on you and that it's good for you. Well, it is to a point, and we do need, I think the key is you do need to set a resolution for the experience. It's very important to have that attempt to accomplish something and to succeed at the goal. We have many famous people in life that have tried goals, like mm-hmm. Lincoln lost most of his bids for public office until he broke up his personal relationship with his fiance, and then he became senator and then became president. Suddenly, boom, you know. And things can happen like that, but there are steps that happen.
Sure. And how much of it is sometimes just the way, I mean, I know that when we're young, we spend a lot of time in school wanting to be like someone else.
Correct.
Occasionally. You know, you wish you were taller, you were whatever, more athletic, smarter. And then I think we drag that. How much of that do we drag into adulthood?
Oh.
But instead we're measuring.
Right.
We just change the yardstick, I guess.
Exactly. And we feed some bad habits to that. You know, in fact, one of the studies call it a maladaptive decision making.
Well, I saw that on your list of things you fix. I didn't know what it meant, so I kept out of it.
Yeah. So, but it's kind of like this idea that, okay, you want to quit eating. Okay, you want to quit eating too much or eating the wrong foods. So you have that on your list, and then you're going to make a decision to put the pedal to the metal, and you're going to really do it this year. But then the problem is you've got this other foot you're driving with 2 feet that you want to put the brakes on that, because the big issue with most resolutions is you want to accomplish something, but then on the other side there's something that you're gaining by – in your head, you don't want to deny yourself of something.
Oh. Mm-hmm.
Oh yeah.
So if I'm going to get something, is it going to be as good as what I've been getting?
You got the angel and the devil on each shoulder.
Yeah, you know what I mean?
You have to have the reward.
Yeah. You have to have the reward. Is the reward big enough for what I'm giving up?
Right.
Now, if it's one thing is if you're technically driven to make a decision. Okay, so I'm going to learn certain skills, and I learn these skills, and I can fix my own car. I've learned to do certain skills, and I went mm-hmm. to classes at Shasta College, or I did something online, or I learned from a mechanic, but I can learn this, or I can lose weight. I know, I didn't know that had that many calories. So then you go and you reduce the calories, and all of a sudden your weight comes off, and not such a big deal. But not
I
always.
Hate those people.
I know.
Come on, let's say it together now. We all hate those people.
But I've always believed
but
in.
The technical skills aren't always what it does. It's,
exactly.
It's the internal adaptive skills. It's the stuff that you have inside you that you adapt to things. That is the thing that's more of, I guess I call it the attitudinal problems you have to adjust.
Oh, it does all start there?
It's the attitude.
Mm-hmm.
It really is.
So what about stuff that you have that you just should make friends with?
Like you have
being
to be
late
fat
all the time?
No, you have to be fat to be jolly. I mean, I'm a true believer in that. Now I have to throw it away.
Well, how come they put the word almond joy?
Exactly.
You know, that's really not always fair to just.
It's
like
not.
That.
Well, it's like we saw Bill's doctor in Costco, and he told Bill he had to lose weight. You know, right? So
he said you had to take that box back.
Well, no, he told
him eyeballing
that,
me.
He told him that before, and we were like, okay, this is fun. It's too bad we're on our, you know, he was kind of on his way out. We were going to run to the bakery section and put a whole bunch of stuff in the cart, you know, and then just drive by him real nonchalant.
Well, see how popular you are with your family. You want to spend time with your family, and you tell them, well, maybe you should control things in their diet. They don't want to spend time with
you.
No, that's right.
And I've experienced that, so I must say I have to reform that maybe.
But, you know, some of the stuff, we're not all going to be the same.
Yes.
We're just, at the end of the day, we're just not all going to be the same.
No.
And, you know, so there are certain people on our Christmas card list that are not going to fun up, which is really unfortunate because that's one thing I really want to fix, people with no sense of humor.
Yes, that could bring up a story I could tell.
I know, me too. I was thinking the same thing. Hurry, take a break.
We don't know who's listening.
I can tell a quick story.
Oh, good. You can tell your story.
Friends,
that's awesome.
Some friends sent a Christmas card to my 90-year-old mother, and they put cotton balls in it, a Christmas card with cotton balls, and it said, you know, some little cute phrase and says, snowman's poop. And my mother's eyes was very, very bright. And her big blue eyes said, someone sent me snowman's poop.
Hey, that is pretty funny.
Was, right over the head.
It didn't, you know.
It just didn't happen.
That age and decade in life just, you know.
Yeah.
That's not the greatest generation's idea of a fun Christmas card.
That's a classic. Huh. I was thinking of somebody I should send that to. They wouldn't get it either, and they're not even old. Oh, my gosh. Okay, so what's if somebody was going to start, like, I don't know if I've ever really made a New Year's resolution. Like, a lot of people make a New Year's resolution that they're going to blow on New Year's Day. You know, like they're not going to eat candy or something like that, or, you know, and they don't even make it out.
Well, the whole weight thing at New Year's is so ridiculous because, I mean,
right. You're
constantly going to parties and there's always special food being made.
Oh, yeah. And football games.
You know, the chips, the dip. Yeah. I mean, how do you
it's
make
like
that right
New Year's all the way to the Super Bowl or something. Yeah. At least that's the way some people feel.
Hey, somebody on the chat room wants to know, says they wish they made more money and what do they have to do to get it?
Well, we want the legal means, but anyway. I guess the key is spending less. isn't that way you have more money? I mean, really. I mean, one lady actually cut back her Pandora music to the basic program and saved $48 a year. You know, it's something. And
made Bill go to the one with the advertisements. It's free.
Yeah, exactly. So you can save some money that way.
Oh, interesting.
So there's little things you can do, coupon cutting out, you know, things like that. But bigger money, well, education. Maybe there's something you need to do to train that would help you get a better paying job. And so going to school, though you spend money, but ultimately to make some more money, that, you know, it's deferred again,
mm-hmm.
that part of idea of deferred gratification.
And what about the idea of making it last longer than the year?
Yeah. I mean, if you do it through, I mean, you still have goals that are one-year goals, 5-year goals, 10-year goals, you can map them out. And I think it's important that everyone do that. And, you know, I've even come to a conclusion, you know, my young 60-plus years, I'm going, well, you know, what am I looking at for the future, too? And am I making some plans and goals? So, you know, that's important to do.
Yeah, and a lot of people don't want to look that far ahead. You know, it's, that really kind of gets scary when you start thinking, well, I got to retire someday. How do I get that whole thing back on track and it gets back to change?
Yeah.
You know, change is huge
for
people.
It's huge. Changing habits, changing spending patterns. You got to fund your retirement.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Doesn't that require some delayed gratification? Certainly
sure,
does.
Sure. And when you talk about, you know, making more money, and more education, maybe a better job. Change. I mean, wow, get a different job. How scary is that? I have to go work somewhere else or maybe move.
Yeah.
Or
just
you get brain locked.
Yeah.
It's I can't do that.
Absolutely. It seems overwhelming. Well, that's why it's important to make some of these brainstorming decisions, obviously, with support networks, people you know,
right,
and say, what does this sound like to you? Does this make sense? And so, you know, and you certainly want someone who's a positive person, not someone who's competitive with you or someone who's negative to you. But you're picking the right people, mm-hmm. not necessarily yes people, but people you know who'd give you an honest mm-hmm. appraisal of, is this a realistic goal? Am I making realistic time decision in this goal? Those are the things, you know. Again, the SMART acronym,
right?
You know, am I being specific enough? Am I being mindful enough about this? Am I making attainable goals? And are they respectable goals? Are they time?
And sensitive? If you already botched it the last couple of years, you should probably just pick something new.
Well,
I mean, I'm just
thinking for us recidivists, you know. Well. Maybe that's not your thing. Pick something where you can win. I mean, if you kind of stink at this,
or pick someone who has some expertise with it, who's done it,
right?
Why not pick someone who's done it before you?
Well, that's something they always tell you
that's
to do is talk to somebody who's successful in that particular field and work with them and talk to them about how they achieved it and what they see you having to do to make the changes to get to your goal. I mean,
that's right.
It's who you hang around with.
That's right.
Yeah, but that's the thing where you do well, they don't do well, and then you got a whole different problem.
I don't know what you're talking about.
I'm going to keep loading up the cart and driving by your doctor.
I see. Another trip to Costco.
Another trip to Costco. I'm going to stalk that guy. Just wanted to see if he'd say something. Be like, what the heck? It's your wife. Get rid of her. She's the problem. So, okay, quick break. Thank our advertisers. Hey, and if you'd like to be a sponsor of the show, go to wethepeopleradio.us. I think I put it on every page. You can do that easily, monthly. What a good New Year's resolution. Sponsor We the People Radio.
Sponsor We the People.
Yes! A great plan.
We need to talk to more people about that.
Oh, yeah. Here's a good one. We'll be back with more from Dr. Tom Andrews
crazy.
Here on KCNR 1460.
I'm crazy for feeling so lonely. I'm crazy. Crazy for feeling so blue.
Talked about God's grace and all the hell we raised. Then I heard the old man say, God is great, beer is good. People are crazy.
Okay, so when you put crazy in your music program, how many songs come up?
Oh.
Like a million?
Probably hundreds.
All of them.
A lot of songs about being crazy. Huh.
Yeah.
Well, and for good reason,
we
huh?
We could do 6 hours.
6 hours of crazy music. So we're here with Dr. Tom Andrews. We're talking about... he's a psychiatrist, so we can talk about whatever we want. We just have to be careful that we don't give up too much information or, you know, we'll wind up on the couch. Do you really have couches?
What are you really saying?
We do.
There are couches?
Yes, there are.
Really?
Yeah.
Do people really lay on them when you talk to them?
Not any longer.
Oh, okay. Okay, that's what I wondered.
In the old days.
Just in the old days. Visit.
Are they just in the waiting room now? Yeah, little things we need to know.
Maybe the little people will lay on them.
Yeah. So you said there were three things that would help people be successful in the New Year's resolution.
That's what came out of the study that they did.
I don't want to miss that.
Yes, Dominican University by Dr. Gail Matthews. She had five groups, ones that just deeply looked at their goals and had looked at the resources they could accomplish it. Then there was those that wrote them down and did step one that I mentioned. And then those that... got an action commitment to do it and wrote down their goals, and then those that did all of the above and shared them with a friend, and then finally those who did all of the above and went to a weekly progress report.
Oh.
In fact, they have some items, I guess, on the internet that you can get that will keep track of your goals for you, and you can actually then email them or send them to a friend. And not surprisingly, but 76% of the participants in Group 5 completed their goals.
Wow.
Oh, my gosh.
So if you write them down.
Writing them down is a biggie.
It's huge.
Yeah, that's a biggie.
Action plan. You make an action plan. And then you have a commitment to sharing it and being accountable with someone else. That's now, the big three.
Now, is it better to, when you look at your action plan, is it better to be a little bit like, should you strive higher, or should you shoot for stuff you know you can make?
Oh, no, you do. I mean, you know, I can just imagine if your contractor built stairs at your house and said, you guys for small goals are going to have these tiny little 3-inch steps, you'd hate it. And then if someone had put, 2-foot steps, you'd hate that. So it has to be a step pattern that's going to be just right for you that works for you.
Gets back to the whole achievable thing.
That's right. Yeah. It has to be reasonable for you. I mean, if you're 500 pounds and you're expecting to swim 50 laps the first time, that's going to be bad. If you swim, if you get your tennis shoes on and get in the pool and walk it a lap or a length with the support of the water and all, you could do it.
Sure.
So don't, and then gradually build up to where you're dog paddling or doing different things or on your back.
But that's the kind of goal. Just the getting started part,
right.
You know, just putting the shoes on and,
exactly.
and walking out the door for that first walk. That, I mean, that a lot of times is just, probably the most important thing is just get started on it.
Exactly.
And then
yeah.
proceed from there. But so many people get locked up before they can even get started.
Right. And they need encouragement. They need then to have some friends behind them that won't badger them, that maybe the family member would or spouse would. But but if they had a friend that they would call and say, hey, let's go for a walk or let's just, and don't stick your foot out the door and say it's too cold, well, then put on extra wraps or clothing. And the key is to develop a pattern. If you do something successfully, a habit, if you do 21 days straight of something, of a habit formation, it will reinforce itself and will start to make changes in your neural patterns. The hippocampus is a very important part of the brain for memory, and it lays down these enzymes, protein enzymes that go to the forebrain, which is where then your memories are laid. And that is very important for developing habits.
So it's on autopilot then.
So it's on more on autopilot. So 21 days.
Do the same thing for 21 days and it locks it in.
It locks it into a more positive self-start mode.
Right.
But if it's 21 days of, not positive self-talk and negativity, well, it can lock you into discouragement too. So you can't be in that negative mode. You have to develop a positive mode towards this. This goal is really going to be something I embrace. And if you say I choose to do it, not Aaron's making me do it or Bill's making me do it, but I choose
that
to do it.
Doctor.
That's it. Very important.
And if you blow it?
If you blow it,
you got to keep going. Reset.
Well, reset and make the goal more realistic then. Make the step. Okay, maybe the steps. I didn't realize this, but the steps to my house, I made 2 feet that day. I should make it 1 foot or 10 inches or whatever the standard rate is for contractors.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, which we don't know. But now we're into a department we're not qualified for. Well, tell me this: when do you see? Are you like? Is it like gyms? I mean, I know. Gyms see a huge influx at the first of the year.
Absolutely, they do. And people are determined. And then they get discouraged. The rains come, and, I don't want to go out today. It's rainy. It's bad. The winds
are
blowing.
Or it's sunny.
Or it's even sunny and cold. Or
I could just do this at home.
I can do this
good.
At home. Or I missed it. Or I got a bad phone call from a friend, and I just don't feel like it. Or I got to pay this bill today. This really gets me down. I really shouldn't pay for the gym membership. No, you probably the best thing for you is the gym membership, and it will give you the energy. Maybe you need to taper off maybe the TV, cable, or whatever that you have.
Okay, so let's talk about the stress, because stress is a great way to blow out a positive new habit.
Right.
You lay a whole bunch of stress on there, and that actually makes it a little harder. So, Bill's down. Oh, he's back. Bill's down. Something went down the wrong pipe. What kind of a doctor are you?
Well, in moments of crisis, I can be whatever you want.
That's awesome. Okay, so I was thinking. Okay, we got Bill going through.
Do I need to go there?
We're going to become fully involved. Oh, my gosh. No more drinking. No more drinking and talking. Drinking and talking is bad. I was thinking of all these different things, like with especially the politics that we have happening, and now we've switched over the Senate. So there are a lot of people that are expecting. I mean, again, even though it doesn't make sense, they're expecting a miraculous turnaround, right?
They're expecting the government to change its habits.
Yeah, it's all going to be different now.
A New Year's resolution
for
our
government. That's not an achievable goal.
Yeah, see, we can't make goals for them necessarily, although we can hold them accountable to the goals that we expect them to have. And we can write to them, we can call them, we can say, you know, what we have to do. We can develop political action groups. We can do some certain things to make an influence on our governments to decrease some of the things that they're in excess of.
Sure. Well, for the folks that are kind of, you know, they wind up a little bit, well, let's say, for instance, they would call their local elected office and just, you know, scream at them. Maybe they need to back up a little bit.
There's a New Year's resolution for them not to scream, but to actually come up with a plan or an idea that they think is positive, send it over, describe why they think it's positive, maybe have their elected official be able to hear them instead of them react and emote. But I'm sure, you know, they have a different idea probably of what they think the government should be doing for them versus what the government is able to do for them. And that is another issue. Are they really, you know, able to see that?
Mm-hmm.
And maybe that's part of what the government's in error, because we are all things to all people, and in fact, we really are not to be.
We weren't supposed to be that.
We weren't supposed to be that.
That's true. We set up an unrealistic
expectation. Uh-huh. And people will be disappointed and mad and angry and take it out on you.
How much do you hear about that kind of thing in your practice?
Well, the fact of my practice is next door to Doug Lamalfa's office. I've seen demonstrations, so I guess we've actually seen some things.
The garbage can lid banging people.
Yes, yes, yes.
It is always kind of funny, though, on those days. I'm like, is it for us or you? Which way will they turn, right or left? It is kind of interesting, though, how much that affects people. So you've been doing this for 30 years.
Yes.
Is the political, effect on people higher than it's been in the past? Because I don't know if I just watch more now.
Well, I think certainly life has become more complicated. And the times we live in, there's more people. There's more dangerousness out there. There's more laws that have produced, unfortunately, changes in our city that have affected us. And as a result of that, people are feeling more anxious and not as safe. And we need to create an environment that creates safety for people. I mean, the things you're seeing across the country and the protests that you see in Ferguson and Berkeley and New York and other areas epitomize the idea of groups of people not feeling safe, or at least told they're not safe.
Right.
And then actions that may indicate that.
It creates a perception. Exactly. It creates a perception of the danger.
Right. And we need to create an environment in which people feel that the government is there to protect and not put them at risk. And that's very important. And how we can do that depends on how we educate the community and how we as leaders show support for those institutions that make us safe.
Right.
And then
the ones that are doing a good job.
Doing a good job. So
what I hear you saying is we're overprotected.
Well, we are somewhat overprotected, overcontrolled, I suspect.
I think we're kind of over-manipulated, actually.
Yeah. And that happens many times in environments where there's more problems and you're trying to put out fires instead of necessarily solving the problem. And you do that when you are, like we talked about in here, in decision making, you feel like you're under a time pressure. And the government feels this time pressure maybe in making some decisions. It's better to make a thoughtful decision that includes all parties that are feeling in their own eyes mismanaged or mistreated.
Sure.
And so I think it's important to have that dialogue and to have that kind of conversation, because, you know, for years there have been things that have happened in the past in the Deep South that have been terrible, you know, to minorities and even in the North. So we need to create an environment of safety and protection. And at the same time, we need to give respect to our
sure.
There has to be a little bit of. There has to be a.
Well, we have to be kind of factual about it,
right,
too. You know,
right.
A lot of this is taken very much out of context.
Right.
And
right.
Then they, you know, it gets blown up and blown up
right.
and blown up. And pretty soon, that's the problem.
Right.
Which is kind of another issue. Do you ever tell people to just turn their TV off? Is that part of their
Well, you know, it's a real good idea to, as the year approaches, you know, I think it's important. I mean, like that last song,
step away
and have a spiritual kind of thing. I mean, Proverbs 1:7 says the beginning of wisdom is fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. So you kind of, that's an important thing. If we would solve our problems with the idea, and fear doesn't mean terror, it means respect, understand that. And it says, is the beginning of wisdom. The word beginning in Hebrew or Aramaic is Rashit, which is the same word they used that in the beginning God created heaven and earth. Mm. So if we understand God's direction and creatorship in our own lives, give him authority over that, we will then make better decisions because we do it in context of what is his will for me, you know, and, you know, are there open doors, are there closed doors in my life? Are there people who influence me in a good way or don't? And what principles that are similar to the principles of how to treat my fellow man, you know, mm-hmm. with love and how to treat God with respect? Those are the things that will help us, I think, make better decisions for the year.
And kind of stay on track.
Yeah, yeah. And I think what you said about people being influential in your life, I think you have to really step back and look at what they're telling you. Is that really something that's good for me? And over a period of time, has that really come to pass? What they're saying, is it good? Is it bad? Is it true? Is it false? And kind of every once in a while, take a measurement of
right
of what they're telling you, and maybe you need to get advice from somebody else.
Yeah, absolutely. Advice from someone else. And, you know, we have to have a measure in our lives. What do we measure? Is anything goes in life? And so you can do any decision you want, any short-term goal. I mean, how many more mistakes can I afford to make of this kind that could cost me in the long run?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, I think of the movie, you know, I didn't see the movie, the book we saw special on Unbroken. And, you know, looking at the life of Zeffirelli, the Olympian who was captured by the Japanese and then succeeded. But his change of life happened after he saw Billy Graham, Evangelistic Crusade, and he realized mm-hmm. what was holding him back in his life was his hatred towards his enemies. And as he saw that, all of a sudden he saw the love of God. And so sometimes he also said that he ran out of the tent meeting at first. And he said, I'm never going back there again. And that's that immune response I talked
right,
about.
Right, right.
That immune response in our body that sees something as an enemy, but it really isn't an enemy. In the study
that's
that they
had. That's your first reaction.
It's your first reaction to have this overwhelming immune. Oh, I can't have.
Your non-acceptance.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But like he did, he went back in and he realized that God had been talking to him all through his life. And even in the raft when he was, you know, he pulled him out of the plane wreck, and he didn't know how he called on God to save him, and there he was on the top of the surface. Next moment, he knew.
Mm-hmm.
And so that kind of thing is key for every person's life. I mean, I'm sure there's been train wreck experiences all of our lives that we've seen that God has pulled us out of. And if we could just look at that and say, maybe he's got a different plan for me than I think he has, and maybe I need to listen instead of doing it my way. Maybe I need to do it his way. And that would be a very huge thing.
I think back in the day we used to call that get a clue. It's a clue. All right, I'm supposed to be getting a clue over here. I guess that's what made me think of that. Bob's giving me the high sign. I have to thank our advertisers. You're listening to We the People Radio. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us. Phone number's not important now because you won't have time to call in.
You never know what it's like. Your blood like winter freezes just like ice. And there's a cold and lonely night that shines from you. In a simple way, and if you need to know while I'm still standing, you just fade away. Don't you know I'm still standing better than I ever did? Looking like a true survivor, feeling like a little kid. I'm still standing after all this time, picking up the pieces of my life without you on my mind. I'm still standing.
Huey Lewis in the New Year's resolution.
Love it.
Good one, Bob.
I'm so square. I'm a circle.
Nice. Okay, so in our last couple of minutes, if you had to give him a hot tip for the year.
Well,
no pressure.
No pressure.
No pressure.
No pressure. This is going to make it or break it for everybody for the new year.
Spend some quiet time every morning to prepare your day ahead.
Mm.
Use a spiritual mindfulness moment. Exercise. Find someone you can be accountable for if you're having a food issue or a habit issue, such as drinking or cigarettes or any drugs. And in the process of that, allow yourself to be open to the leadings of a bigger spirit than yourself. That gives you hope and peace and joy in your life. And if you write it down, your goal, you make a commitment, and then you be accountable to a friend, family member, or God himself, good thing to do.
Nice. And step away from things that make you stressed.
That's a good plan.
And people who make you stress. Sometimes that's a toughie, though. People give other people a ton of power in their life. You know, that's it's true. The coworker, whatever.
Yes, yes.
That's always a trick, though, is identify which ones are good and which ones are bad. Ones are bad for you.
Well, like Zamperini found out when he went back to Japan and forgave all those people that tortured him in the prison camp.
Mm-hmm.
That was a big, huge load off his shoulders. So there's some people that maybe torture you day to day, and you have to kind of take in mind of how can I
got
to
get over it,
get over that, and let it go, and even in fact help them.
Oh, that's a good idea. Well, I do think that this is that time of year where we either take stock and we're not happy, or we take stock and we're going to do a better job. But at the end of the day, the time marches on.
That's right. So and, 21 days between. New Year's and the next Super Bowl game or whatever.
Yeah.
Get that habit ingrained so you take care of yourself and you do the right
thing.
And
if you blow it,
you got still
you
chance.
Start over.
You got another chance. Absolutely.
Yeah.
It's
you always
the experience.
Have another chance. Yeah.
It's the experience. You need to learn from that.
Yeah, so we want people to come on the chat room next week. Let us know how that first week went for you. Yeah. Oh man.
Well, we really appreciate you coming on.
You're welcome.
I mean, it's great advice.
Now you get to go on vacation with your family.
Yeah, yeah.
Yay.
Warm
vacation
waters.
Is good.
It's a good, healthy thing.
Nice.
Time with the family, my first goal.
Time with the family.
I promise we won't call.
Well, you're the only one that's doing that.
We'll spread the word.
Everyone else is going to call. Right on. Dr. Tom Andrews, thanks a lot for ringing in the new year with us.
Blessings.
Bob, it's been fabulous.
It's Casey and I, Shasta Redding.
Second hour of We the People Radio. That was a good first hour.
My pen.
I learned a lot of things that I should do and shouldn't do. And
this is like Mental Health Sunday. That sounded a lot like mental hell. I meant Mental Health Sunday.
I have a feeling it's going to be a little bit of mental hell here.
I did learn that there is a place called hell in Norway, and it freezes every other winter. I learned that on Twitter last night. I'm like, who would name their town that? Maybe in Norwegian it's a different word.
So hell actually does freeze over.
It does.
Yes, it
I
does.
Know. That was the whole point of actually the story, and don't ask me what made me think of that. Relatively inappropriate. So, Mr. Guy Asherman.
Hi.
Turns out, in addition to being a pastor, you are a marriage and family therapist. I thought, this is Mental Health Sunday.
Yeah. Great way to get into the new year.
Exactly.
If you're here, you are going to learn a lot.
Well, you know.
You get a foot up on everybody else. A foot up.
It's a leg.
A leg up, yeah. A leg, a foot, a hand.
We're obviously going to need.
I think I was in the back of my mind. I was thinking a boot in the.
No, that's different.
That's different
that's
too.
A whole different motivation there. That's the one where the New Year's resolution doesn't go well.
I'm sure if Tom was here, he'd tell me what that meant.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That probably means something.
Yeah, I'm sure it does.
Yeah, we didn't analyze any dreams or do any of that good stuff. We just kind of talked about how to.
Yeah. I tried not to look at me.
Stay on the straight and narrow. Yeah, Bill's in the chat room writing, he's looking at me again.
Time to stop looking at me.
You're killing me. So, how was Christmas?
It was great.
Packed house?
It was, yeah. You know, because you always have that large group of people that go to church twice a year.
Yes.
Yep.
One on Christmas and once on Easter.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And so we welcome them for their
punch
journey.
Their ticket. Yep.
Yeah. And so, yeah, we had had a great time, had a good group. And, of course, it's always a time of mixed emotions. You know, it's a end of the year. It's been a good year. It's been a bad year. It's been Christmas. And we like to say Christmas is a time for family, but that's not always a good thing either. So there's a lot of brokenness and a lot of pain and a lot of hurt.
Mm-hmm.
But there's also a lot of reason to rejoice and to focus our priorities where they need to be.
Sure.
Yeah.
Okay, so if you do marriage and family therapy, you see a lot of folks who have issues in the marriage and family thing. But just
well, they're the people that want to admit they have issues. A lot of everybody has issues.
Right, the other people are repressing it.
Yeah, they're just not going to admit it. Yeah.
So how much of the, you know, how much of the group do you think in the world, how many people are really struggling there? Most? Half?
Well, maybe the best way to describe it is that there are those who know they have them and those who don't, as Bill suggested.
Ah, Bill's right again.
Because
it.
we all have our struggles. We have different ways of coping with it.
Sure.
And but I think the family unit is in serious trouble, not just in this country, but around the world. I think it always has been, and it's just because it's happening more here at home, and we see it, that we have a tendency to believe the sky is falling. But the family unit's been in trouble since the beginning, and always for the same reasons.
Which are?
And
what you just kind of,
sure.
You know, we're going to talk in generalities. So.
Yeah. Well, this is a principle, I think, that applies to everything in our lives, and that is that there are unseen powers and forces that are responsible for what happens in our lives. And we as a country, the more secular we are becoming, have been living under the illusion that America is good or family is good and that we have done a good job because of something we did, something we believed, without a recognition that there's more than just principle involved with holding life together. I think that there is the person of the Lord who holds life together in ways we do not yet or may never fully comprehend until we meet him. I think the family unit today is falling apart because, you know, as families, we have basically said, God, we got this one. We can do this without you.
Yeah, we're good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, you were a luxury at some point in time in the olden days.
Sure. And that applies to politics. That applies to everything that we, I think, have been living in ignorance for quite some time now, that what made America great is that God made this country great, and he held things together. And now that we have, again, kind of washed our hands of him, he's kind of leaving us to our own devices, and it's not working very
well. It's not working out so great.
No, because we kind of think it's steering the ship. I mean, that's not really where we shine.
Right, right. Well, we want to steer it, not him, and we don't do so good.
We're good deckhands.
Yeah.
Bad captains. I'm sorry.
That's all right.
We're all kicking each other under the table. Interesting. And so, what do you tell people when they come in? What's like the first thing? If somebody comes in and says, you know, we're just not getting along, we're thinking about, you know, maybe getting divorced, but we've got kids and, you know, we know it's not good for them and.
Yeah. Well, it's a challenge, Aaron, because what people are looking for when they go to see a counselor is a non-judgmental, completely clean slate. I love you for who you are and the choices you make. And so I will not pass judgment on anything that you tell me.
Nobody's fault.
Yeah, it's all about unconditional love. And by the way, I think a counselor should be all of those things for people. The problem being is that there is still a right way and a wrong way to live life. And when you suggest to people that there's a better way of doing things, it feels judgmental to them. So what people want is make my life better, but don't make me change. Don't make me responsible. And that's pretty hard to do, you know. So we have to meet people where they are and try to love them and encourage them as best we possibly can. And maybe the best way to respond to some of the brokenness and the choices that we're making in life and fulfilling the definition of insanity by doing the same things over and over and expecting different results is to just simply ask, how's that working for you? Because the answer to that is not very good.
Okay, mm-hmm. Then what do you want to do about it? And that hopefully gets us rolling into a healthy direction and discussion of how much of this is in my power and what choices can I make that's going to help it.
Sure.
Yeah.
And for as far as like you know, families with kids, mm-hmm. obviously, I mean, families can be just two people too, but mm-hmm. families with children, especially young children, mm-hmm. think it's better if the folks stick together and kind of duke it out, or.
Well, depending on how you define duke it out.
I know.
That's a loaded.
I kind of loaded that on purpose.
Well, you know, we have our ideals. Mm-hmm. We have even biblical concepts of what family is to be.
Oh.
We have biblical concepts about, you know, divorce and marriage and remarriage and all of that. And, you know, I'm a family therapist, therefore I am pro-family. An awful lot of family therapists are not necessarily pro-family, interestingly enough.
What?
But,
really?
Yeah, because sometimes the first advice they give people is, yeah, I think your marriage is over, you better check it. But awesome. I think that there are times when the family turmoil is so bad that it's actually healthier for children if we decide to do something different than duking it out.
Sure.
Yeah.
Well, sometimes you have to – it was interesting. I was talking to somebody, and they said, well, I just don't feel like this was a lady, and she said, you know, I don't feel like my husband really respects me that much. I don't think he doesn't mm-hmm. really make me feel loved and that kind of thing. And, mm-hmm. and it's been, oh, you know, there's a tit for tat going on, mm-hmm. you know, like I did this, he did that, I did this, he did that. And I'm thinking, yeah. How exhausting that you yeah. would be keeping score like that. I mean, really, how exhausting. And who's ever going to win a game like that?
Right. And there's usually underlying issues as to why they're resorting to that.
Yeah.
That oftentimes are not readily accessible in our hearts and minds or even discovering it.
I suggested maybe she just pretend he was being nice. Forget about all the other stuff. And for a week, just pretend.
Yeah.
Just try that and see what it felt like. And it was kind of funny. She called yeah. back and she said, you know, actually, this week was kind of great.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like, throw away the scorebook.
Well, and certainly.
That was probably bad advice, but I didn't have anything else at my disposal.
No, I think it was great advice.
And I thought it sounded exhausting.
Yeah. Well, you know, sometimes we have to do what we know is right, whether we feel like it or not. And that's kind of, it sounds to me like that's kind of what you were telling her is do the right thing, treat him well, he can treat you well. And it helps, it works.
Well, do it without, I guess it's not like putting money in a gumball machine. You know, I think that some of what was going on was I put my money in the gumball machine and I got cheated because nothing came out.
Right.
And
right.
It's like, you know, life isn't really like that.
Sure.
And people aren't really like that.
Yeah.
Do kids always want their folks to get back together, especially when they're little?
Yes.
They do. Seems like they probably do.
Yes. Because that's their only experience with family. It's all they've ever known. It's all they've ever seen.
Mm-hmm.
And the unfortunate thing with families is that oftentimes children will accept the responsibility for the breakup of their mom and dad because, you know, they're not perfect. They've done things wrong.
They think they did it.
Well, they've seen mom and dad perhaps argue over the way to raise children, and which happens in almost every family. Unfortunately, we don't have the discretion to not do that in front of them. And so children oftentimes assume a parental role, interestingly enough, and they feel the responsibility to fix their mom and dad's marriage. And a reverse parental role is never healthy for kids. It puts the responsibility in their minds on their shoulders for helping two other people get along when they should.
Do they always feel that it's their fault? I mean, when they're not getting along, do they put themselves in that role?
Almost always,
they do.
They accept some degree of responsibility for it, and it's not fair. It's not healthy, but
mm-mm.
it's the reality of it.
Now, do you work? I would imagine you work with the kids too.
Yes,
the mom, the dad, the kids. Do you have them all in? You don't have them all in there at the same time, though.
Sometimes,
really?
Depending upon the age of the children, and you know, sometimes you know. If they're teenage kids, for example, yeah, I'll have them all in. If they're younger, I might do individual work with them. But no, if the teenagers are smart enough to know what's going on, and maybe they are contributing to some of the unrest.
It would seem like that would be a really difficult role to take because you're there to point out or highlight what's wrong with them,
mm-hmm.
you know, and people take that personal and,
sure.
and get kind of itchy with that and probably don't want to come back.
Right. Well, and of course, it's not about finding fault. It's not about who do we blame here. It's about dealing with the reality of it. What can we do to go better, to move forward and do better? But certainly from my perspective, and I think almost everybody who's in this business of trying to help families, is, you know, we have our own baggage. And for us to say there's something wrong with you and this is what you need to do, probably the best approach is, you know, your story sounds an awful lot like mine.
Yeah,
there's brokenness in my heart and in my life, too. So let me just share what worked for me, what doesn't work for me. And if some of that sticks or works for you, then we can run with it. But, you know, for any of us to say we have the answers and you don't, we don't, you know,
mm-hmm.
we don't.
But, sure.
But that's, we help. We try to work it through together.
That's the feel, felt, found principle there.
Yeah. Yeah. You know. Yeah. Like they went there to find out about you. Mm-hmm. Not. We're going to be back with Guy Asherman here in just a couple of minutes. You are listening to We the People Radio. Join us on the chat. We're having a little sidebar discussion on there. You can get there at wethepeopleradio.us. Nice. Bob. Bob's picked the ultimate song for us yet again.
We can't get through the show without playing this one.
No, we can't, can we?
Well, you filled up my head with so many lies. You twisted my heart till something snapped inside. I'd like to give it one more try, but my give a damn's busted.
Mother's tired, she needs a rest. The kids are playing up downstairs. Sister's sighing in her sleep. Brother's got a date to keep, he can't hang around. Something happening, and it's usually quite loud. Our mum, she's so house proud. Nothing ever slows her down, and a mess is not allowed.
No, it's not.
Our house.
Classic.
In the middle of
it fits.
There you go.
Our yeah.
House. The ultimate marriage and family counseling theme song.
Yes.
I believe. Because the other one, that might give a damn's busted, that's probably not the one you want to use.
And all my exes live in Texas.
Yeah, there's that one, too. That's true. You have a lot of options. So we were talking a little bit during the break there about politics in the pulpit.
Mm-hmm. Well,
so what's the balancing act there?
Of course, the world says, or people say, and it's a cliche that's been around for probably centuries, you know, with your friends, you never talk politics and religion. And I'm kind of in the business of both.
Yeah, we talk about politics and religion all the time.
Sure,
we like it.
Sure. And I think the reason that we say that is because whatever our views may be, we're usually passionate about it. And if we are passionate, it comes across passionately. And other folks, of course, want to make a counterpoint. So we're not very good at listening to one another, but we're very good at sharing. So, yeah, the idea of politics and religion, for me, and I think probably is a good idea for people of faith, to have those things prioritized. And that is that my faith is more important than my politics. Yes, I am passionate about it, but my faith is what directs my life. But, of course, my faith permeates every chamber of my heart, every discipline of life. Faith is a part of that.
Sure.
So our faith is a part of our politics. It is a part of what we believe about country, about God, about personal responsibility, and you can go on and on.
Well, it's the basis of what we see as right and wrong, and right and wrong is a big place.
Yes, and if we don't have something that clearly provides the foundation of what right and wrong is, then we're on a wild goose chase, and it's subject to people's opinions. Everybody has different opinions. And even though people will say, well, you can't legislate morality, actually you can't legislate without it, because mm-hmm. politics is about promoting what is good and trying to discourage what is bad. Well, how do you define what's good and bad? Thus, the confusion we have in our country today is a reflection of our religious state. We're hurting in the area of knowing and understanding our faith, and that reflects in our family issues, it reflects in our political issues,
But we're trying to pretend that there is some objective standard that doesn't involve God.
Right.
That somewhere, you know, there is a right place that has nothing to do with morality.
Do you run into families that haven't really taken an active hand in introducing religion to the children in the family?
Yes, and people themselves as adults are not quite sure where they stand, and introducing children to it can be a real complicated mess because, number one, parents may not know. And media and culture, the secular society that we live in today is sending so many mixed signals.
Sure.
And even for parents who are firm in their faith and know what they believe and are very well grounded in that, teaching their children what they believe, sometimes they're the only voice that their kids are hearing, and the schools and society and the media are basically telling kids your parents are nuts. Mm-hmm. Don't listen to them. Hurry up, grow up, and get out as quick as you can so that you don't have to do what other people tell you to do. That's their terminology, not mine.
I think they did that when we were kids.
But there was.
But it's a lot louder now.
It's louder. Yes, they were challenging our values and always have.
Sure.
But I think that we have undermined the family structure so significantly that we're not, you know, the rooster has come home, so to speak. Isn't that the expression? And
the chickens have come home to roost.
That's what it is. Thank you. I knew there was a roost in it somewhere.
We had Bill's foot and his leg, and now we've moved.
And so
we're going to rewrite all of them.
And some of that, you know, probably can also be summarized in the area of authority, that we don't want authority. We don't recognize authority, not in government. Not in Ferguson, not in Redding, California, not in the church, not...
And especially not if it's messing up our fun.
Yeah.
And it's telling us to do things that maybe are hard, you know.
Yes.
We just don't want to.
Right. And certainly we don't want to recognize God as an authority either. Mm. And so all of the areas where we have authority issues in our society today all stem from the idea that if God is not in control, if God is not an authority, then anything goes. His desk is where every buck stops. But if you don't recognize his desk,
you take that away, then you're pretty much open to do whatever you feel is right.
Well, makes
you feel good.
How much of that, I mean, kind of back to the counseling, because this, I guess, becomes a mental health issue. How much of that really makes the world unstable for people? I mean, the idea that there is no God, God is, I mean, you know, because I always think about it. You do the right thing for the right reasons. It'll all work out, not necessarily in your time.
Right. Well, I think that historically in our lifetime when we were youngsters, the idea that even though back in those days, not that it was that long ago, right? A few years ago when we were children.
That's right. Yeah, easy on that way.
53.
We were able to say as a culture that we're not sure that God is going to have that preeminent place in our life that he used to have, but we still lived with the fruit of it from previous decades and centuries. So we were a culture that was more functional than we are today. But as time goes on, the more and more we leave that behind, succeeding generations don't have any kind of a foundation, whether it's cultural, biblical, or whatever. That we're falling further and further away from any concept of there being an absolute truth. Now, of course, today we live in an era that is called postmodernism. And, you know, postmodernists believe that your truth is your truth, my truth is my truth, there is no absolute truth. Therefore, who's to say what you believe is right or wrong for me?
And if we all go along with that, we'll have no problems.
Yeah, exactly.
We'll wander aimlessly in the desert.
Right. We'll be okay.
Well, the result is anarchy. And by the way, we're well on the path of anarchy. And yet even those who say, you know, that religion is what actually created problems, religion creates a frustrated conscience. If there were no right and wrong, people wouldn't suffer from a guilty conscience. I disagree with that premise. Mm. Because I think that innately
it's built in because you
have to have you know that guilt.
Well, it's funny. I mean, I realize that we don't probably take our dogs to therapy, but you see that with dogs. Mm. You know, we come home and it's like, you know, you look at him, what have you guys been doing? And one of them, like, looks up at us, and the other one goes and hides. You're like, oh, somebody peed on the rug. You know, I mean, even animals know.
Yeah, yeah.
And I know they don't know English, so, you know, what was it about that look that made him go and hide? And then you find, yes, somebody was up to no good.
Sure, sure.
I mean, people have to have, I mean, if our animals have it.
Right. They messed on the rug. They knew they weren't supposed to, and
they were caught. They were up to no good while we were gone, and they knew it, and they were waiting for us to come home. And so, and people, of course, have.
And certainly, there are cultural influences that impact our conscience. I think our conscience comes from the culture of our families. It comes from our churches. It comes from society in general. And I do think that consciences can be programmed incorrectly.
Mm-hmm.
For example, people in the world today are programmed to believe that if you want to have a clear conscience before God, you have to go kill people.
That's true.
Right?
Yeah, because that's part of how you get there.
Yeah.
Confusing.
Yeah. And if you refuse to do that, then there's something wrong with you. Well, now that's an extreme case, and
sure.
We see that operating amongst us in
very, you have
very
to go strap bombs to your kids.
Right.
You know,
yeah, that makes you a good child of God.
Well, I think conscience and character kind of go hand in hand too. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's kind of a big building block right there.
Well, I think it is because if I'm going to have good character in my life, I have to have a conscience that's sensitive to not doing wrong things.
Wrong,
I want to have
right.
Or I'm not saying that very
mistreating
well.
People or
yeah.
Or yeah.
Yeah. So character and conscience are very much related.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So when you really feel that there's something coming on the ballot, for instance, that mm-hmm. that has an element of morality to it,
yeah.
and you need to bring it up
yeah.
at church, how do you go about that?
Well, you know, we try to be careful because I don't want people to think that I believe the answers to this country are found in politics.
Sure.
I do not believe that. Furthermore, I don't want to give an endorsement to a man because he has values that are more consistent with mine, and then he ends up being the Antichrist.
Being an idiot, yeah.
You know?
But I mean, like, things that would be like a measure of something.
Yeah.
You know, maybe it's a marijuana thing, or it's a...
Family, marriage, Prop 8.
Yeah, Prop 8. Yeah. Or, there's sure. a whole lot of stuff down that road.
I think that we have an obligation morally as well as civilly to encourage people to vote their conscience, like we just mentioned. And
mm-hmm.
conscience can be programmed correctly or incorrectly. And I think that the ministry of the church, hopefully, is that we help people's conscience be programmed according to God's views of what life is supposed to be and what good choices and bad choices look like. So when it comes to those kinds of issues, what's good for a country, I happen to believe that God knows what's good for a country. And his standards have never been improved on. We're trying desperately. We're failing miserably.
Yeah.
And our answer to that, our solution to the fact that we're failing miserably is to continue to do more and more of what was wrong in the first place instead of just going back to what it was. Right?
Sure.
We're fools. And so I think that it's okay, and I do it, and I think other pastors do, many of them, to be able to say, you know, there's an issue, there's an initiative that is contrary to what we believe Scripture teaches. And I think that you ought to vote your moral conscience the way the Scriptures would direct you, with an understanding that if we're going to turn this country around, it's not going to be your vote, it's going to be God. Let me also address this from the standpoint of, for the believers that are listening today, what is our hope? As I look at Scripture, and we're grateful for our system of government here. We're grateful for democracy. There's a lot of good things about it. But as I look at Scripture, I have never seen where majority sided with God, even in the people of Israel.
Uh-huh.
It was the people in rebellion. In fact, the whole human race is in rebellion. And at times, God in his goodness intervened, not always in very what we would consider to be nice ways, but God intervenes. And that God is not looking for majority to save this country. We live with that. We want it to be that. And we will work for that.
But a lot of people believe that that's required.
And we're now being disillusioned by that, because if, in fact, what's happening in this country is the fruit of the majority rule, heaven help us. Because we don't necessarily like the decisions that are coming down. And as a people, as a nation, our values are very, very different from what they used to be. In Scripture, God never sided with the majority. The majority was usually that which he battled. And a famous evangelist years ago by the name of Bob Jones coined this phrase, and you've perhaps heard it, and it's been used many times, and that is that you and God make a majority. And I think that the important thing for us as believers, as citizens, is do the right thing, vote the right way, and don't worry about the majority, because this is what happens. When we start getting worried about getting the majority, we start fudging on right and wrong. We start saying, you know, I can get a few more votes if I can just soften my view on this, soften my view on that. And pretty soon it's so watered down.
Yeah, that's a good point.
You don't represent anything anymore.
Because, try to be all things to all people.
Yes. Winning is not getting a majority of votes. Winning is when right things prevail in life. That's winning. Because we have seen a lot of folks who have been placed into office in any party, all parties, who got there by way of majority vote, but they were not statesmen. They prostituted themselves to get the majority of votes. And we don't need that in politics. We need people with convictions.
Absolutely.
You know, and so.
And plenty of it.
A lot of it. Yeah. A lot of it. And if that means I'm not going to get a vote, okay, my conscience.
That's right.
Comes
your
back
conscience,
to conscience
is clear, and you right. know you did the right thing, and you can stand behind it.
Yes,
and you can tell people.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that's another part of the equation, isn't it? Is being able to voice that opinion to others, to give them a clear conscience and a
well,
little
at least
bit of a moral
they know,
compass.
If they don't like you, at least they know what they don't like. You stood for something.
Well, maybe they never heard it from anybody before.
But
true story.
The interesting thing today is that in the PC world is that it's okay to share your thoughts and your feelings so long as they are in this camp.
Right.
If you have thoughts and feelings that are contrary to that, then we're going to try to shout you down. So I come from a conservative religious and political standpoint. So those in our camp are kind of used to being shouted down. And so freedom from the perspective of those who disagree with me is really not the same kind of freedom that those in our camp believe. Because we believe that they do have a right to share their thoughts and their feelings. Hey, freedom of speech. But they don't necessarily give us that same benefit in return.
Mm-hmm. No, not most of the time. Most
it's
of the time,
double standard.
There's a little bit of grief there.
Well, I think another thing that people
hold on. We've got to take a really quick break.
Oh,
otherwise,
great point.
I know. You're going to have to. We're going to hear Bill's. We're going to hear Bill's great idea during the break. We'll be right back with you. You're listening to We the People Radio, and if you would like to call us, you still have time. 530-605-4567, and we're online at wethepeopleradio.us. Here at KCNR 1460 AM.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. What if God?
There you go.
Great song. I've never heard that one. That's a great song.
That is a great song.
So that was the song that introduced Carrie Underwood to the world.
Really?
No.
I did
when she right after she won American Idol in 2005.
See, that's why you're in charge of the music. And the rest of us just listen.
And they're trying to shout her down now, by the way, too, for her faith.
Really?
In some of the country and western community. Yeah.
So. I got to tell you, it does. I found the cartoon that I was tying up. I told you guys during the break, but a little thing on Twitter. You know, it's good for this kind of stuff. It says, I adore being cussed out and bullied by leftists for not being as tolerant as they are.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And I know that back during the revolution, the pastors were really the movers and shakers of the revolution, the black robes.
And the church was the meeting place. That's where that's where our founding documents were written up. And certainly the philosophy, although not all of our founding fathers were Christians, but they were at the very least deists of some kind, and certainly influenced by a culture that was directed by the values of the Christian faith.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I mean, there was a significant part in who we are, making who we are. And in that came the freedoms that we have. For people to say that Christianity denies freedoms or that we're the oppressors is an insane statement, because actually it was our values, Christian values, that gave us the Constitution that we have, that allowed people who disagree with us a platform to disagree with us. And now that they have perhaps a stronger voice in the community, in our society, than we do, what do they want to do but to silence us, as opposed to us giving mm-hmm. them the freedom and the liberty to become who they are?
Well, you look at, I mean, we were talking about it at the beginning, like 10% or fewer are people who don't believe there is a God.
Mm-hmm.
So they would maybe be qualified, I don't know whether, do you practice being an atheist, or are you just one?
Well,
I don't really know how to term that.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, so they believe in being an atheist, I guess. And yet yeah. those guys, because the other 90% are super tolerant, all of a sudden now they're running everything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Kind of interesting.
Well, this is what democracy is made of. This is the tension that exists, always has, always will. And I think that in America, we're a bit spoiled. You know, we have lived in a Christian culture all of these years, and we're not used to people standing up and rising up against it and creating issues. And as a result of that, we're not very well versed in trying to give an argument to why we're right, and we have those freedoms.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we're learning, we're growing, and so it's all good.
Some of that tolerance, though, opens up a door that is more a Pandora's box.
Yes, but, you know, we have to encourage dialogue.
Dearborn, Michigan, for instance.
We have to encourage people who disagree to dialogue. We shouldn't be shouting people down.
No.
No.
They may want to shout us down, but not all of them. There's a handful on both sides that give everybody a bad name.
Yeah, that's true.
There are folks in the conservative circles that I walk in who give conservatives a bad name. There's people in the other circles that give them a bad name. I think we have to have dialogue. I think we have to have a mutual respect for one another. And because without that, you know, the anger just gets worse and worse and worse until we end up shooting at each other in the streets, you know. And then, of course, there's always people who want to advance themselves by grabbing a cause and misarticulating it, putting all kinds of energy and misconceptions into it to try to play on people's emotions that empowers them.
I'm totally thinking of Al Sharpton right now. Because I can't think of anybody who embodies that more.
Yeah, yeah. No, it's true. And let's play into people's anger, and let's make ourselves.
And if there isn't any anger there, please let's make something.
Yeah.
Because life's always better that way.
But in all fairness, that happens on the right as well.
Sure.
You know, there are people who are tapping into our anger,
mm-hmm.
right,
mm-hmm.
to try to advance their cause. Sharpton is tapping into other people's anger and frustrations. So it happens on all sides.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, we've got Horse Creek Mike on the phone with us. I don't know if he can be on the chat room. He is typically bad trouble with the chat room, but he can use a phone. Hey, Mike.
He has a pen and a phone.
You got a pen and a phone, man. You could be the president.
God forbid.
I didn't say that.
The other side would hate me.
Yeah, exactly. So,
anyway,
fire away.
My question comes in that whenever we see Christians actually get out and vote, conservatives tend to win. The majority of Christians seem not to want to vote. And I've run into more than my fair share, people say, hey, you know, mine is not of this world. My kingdom will come. You know, my kingdom is of the gods, you know, in the future. And I look at this and I try to argue with him. God has given us a wonderful tool here, a wonderful nation, and for us to squander it and not take an active part is, in a sense, embracing the devil. How do we make this argument in a better way so that Christians do come out and vote their conscience?
Great question, Mike. Those of us in ministry ask that same question. We try to address it. We try to encourage people to be good citizens. And even though, of course, we are citizens of heaven, we are also citizens of this country. And when the scriptures were written, even the Apostle Paul, he's a citizen of heaven, but he also appealed to Caesar because he was a citizen of Rome. And so he saw a sense of dual citizenship, if you would. And I think that believers do possess a dual citizenship, and we have a responsibility to both. If you look at churches on the left, they have been using their pulpits for political reasons for decades and decades. Many of the leaders in the liberal front, the pulpit is where their campaigns begin. The double standard nowadays is that if you do that in a conservative framework, that you get letters from the IRS, you get letters from people who say you're not allowed to mix politics with your 501c3 status.
Yeah.
And so that is one that's being thrown at us all the time. I think what it takes, Mike, is a lot of courageous people in churches that say, not ugly, not mean, not nasty, but just with a firmness that says we do have a freedom in this country to speak. And this idea that churches aren't allowed to do that, that's not part of the Constitution. That's not part of law. That's part of bureaucracy, bureaucratic statute that has been put in place for the purpose of preserving certain parties and certain influences. We have a freedom in this country to speak political issues from the pulpit. An awful lot of pulpits don't think that that's true. The other reason, too, I think, Mike, is that as pastors, we understand that our priority, of course, being that people would understand the gospel, the good news that Jesus Christ came, was incarnate. That's why we have Christmas. He was crucified and resurrected. That's why we have Easter. And that has a great significant message for all of us as individuals, that our sins can be forgiven and our eternity can become secure. If in the process of talking about politics, that gets in the way of the message of redemption, that we perhaps see it as a lost opportunity to win a soul because they don't have our same political views. I think it's a legitimate point. Our first priority is to win souls. However, we also believe that if people do come to Christ, that it also impacts their politics, that they do vote biblically. And I have heard the same statistics that you have, and that is that if Christians would just vote, we could carry elections. Again, we don't think elections are what helps this nation. We think God is the one who helps this nation, but we shouldn't be passive. And that's not the history of this country. Christians should not be passive on a political front.
I always think of that that phrase, you know, even God doesn't drive parked cars.
Right.
You know.
Yeah. Yeah. And you can't drive by looking in the rearview mirror.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I know oftentimes it's quite difficult when we look at an election to choose between the two evils that we see.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. We don't like either of the candidates. We don't like either of their policies. You know, one is pro this and anti that and et cetera, et cetera. And they both vary from a proper Christian stance. But you have to choose your poison. Otherwise somebody else is going to choose it for you. Let us choose the lesser of two evils, that which we can work with and correct, you know.
I think
Christians
and conservatives are disillusioned on many fronts. So this, what you're describing, is not just true of Christian believers or Christian politicians and so forth. It's true of conservatives as a whole. And that is that we're losing hope that elections work at all. We're losing hope that people stand up and they use the kind of rhetoric that appeals to those who are more conservative in their philosophy. And once they get into office, it changes nothing. you know, abortion or marriage, any number of political issues that are very important to those who are conservative. We vote for people who give lip service to this, but nothing ever changes. I think part of the reasons people don't vote is because they're disillusioned. We're losing hope that it works anymore.
No, I think that's right on target. I think people have just totally given up on our political system, which, you know, you can say all you want. It's still the best one out there.
Yes.
And we have a responsibility to get it back on track, and the only way you're going to do that is to vote.
It becomes a self-defeating, you know, it's a snowball going downhill. Right. You know, you don't vote, and
it becomes a,
and it becomes the disaster. And
a self-fulfilling prophecy.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah.
On that note, we've got to take another quick break here. We were tardy on our last break, so we wind up with them all stacked up at the end. Be right back. You're listening to We the People Radio here at KCNR 1460 AM.
Montgomery Gentry.
Every Sunday, we just feel like we need to get out more. Tons of guys we don't know.
I think when we get to heaven, we're going to be a little surprised. They're going to sing country when we get to heaven.
Probably. Well, that's about all that's left in a lot of cases. Yeah. With a good message.
By the way, I hope people don't take me too seriously on some of the comments I make.
No, he was totally.
Like
he was
they
totally
take us seriously.
Yeah. Look, we do our fair share of
goofing
off.
That's why people tune into We the People Radio serious talk.
But. Well, this has been like Serious Sunday a little bit because, you know, a lot of times we talk about political things and environmental things and stuff like that. But, you know, I think it's important at this time of year, whether you had a great time at Christmas and you're looking forward to New Year's or you survived Christmas and you're dreading New Year's.
Right.
It's a hard time for people.
Sure.
You know?
And it's such an important time, and maybe for reasons that we don't always think of. I was sharing this at our church last week. You know, the Old Testament predicts what year Jesus would be born, 483 years before he was born. It tells us what town he would be born in. It tells us what family he would be born in. Daniel, who gave the prophecy of when Jesus would be born, was the chief magi 500 years before the magi came and visited Bethlehem. There's so much interesting and fascinating, not just history, but also prophecy. All of it so clearly defined and told, which proves, in my mind, the accuracy of Scripture. Along with that, it's like, why, if God put so much detail into these facts, why did he not make a motel reservation?
Exactly.
There's no room in the inn. So if he planned all of that, the answer, I think, is that it was also part of God's plan for the Son of God to be born in a barn. And many of us have heard, of course, the expression, maybe our parents shared it with us when we were growing up. Were you born in a barn?
Yeah.
Close the door or
yeah,
whatever.
That's true. And that was actually a good thing.
Yeah. Well, Jesus was born in a barn by design. God wouldn't have gone to the effort of having all of the rest of the prophecy fulfilled exactly as he had planned without that being a part of the plan. And that was an introduction to the humility of the Son of God. That this was one of the most important messages he delivered was his birth, that said, I've come, I'm joining the human race. I come to share with you not just who I am. I come to share with you a better way to live. And the better way to live is not to promote yourself, not to make yourself out to be a power hungry, you know, authority, grab all you can grab. He introduced us to a way of life that says if you want to find some joy and happiness, the best way to do it is to surrender to something bigger than you. Yield yourself to a cause and a purpose other than just you. Don't be a person of pride. Don't be a person of arrogance. The Christmas message is welcome to a life that is more satisfying. And I think that that's critically important for us to focus on in Christmas.
And so now the trick is how we parlay that into our daily life.
Yes.
And how we run our country that way and how we act as citizens. And,
and if we don't,
for heaven's sake, stop rioting. Yeah.
And if we don't parlay that into our life, then we're going to miss out that he's the Prince of Peace.
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
He told us how to have peace. We're ignoring him.
Thank you.
Yep.
It's been a pleasure.
Guy Asherman from Reading Christian.
Yeah, we're so happy you joined us today.
Thanks a million.
Great way to start the new year.
Let's do it again.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah, we can do that.
Hit it, Bob.
This is KCNR Shasta Radio.